Welcome, everybody. Today, we are very happy to have Lorenzo Di Pietro from the University of Trieste, and he will talk about factorization and global symmetries in holography. Please keep your microphones muted and only unmute if you want to ask questions. Lorenzo, the stage is yours.
Thanks, Olga. Thanks a lot for inviting me to present my work. So, yes, today I will tell you about work that I've done in collaboration with Francesco Benini and Christian Copetti from SISSA. And so I will start with some general introduction and motivation. So the motivation is the starting point of the celebrated holographic correspondence that, broadly speaking, is a correspondence between a quantum field theory on one side and a quantum gravity theory, a D plus one dimensional quantum gravity theory with some fixed asymptotics, which corresponds to the background where our quantum field theory lives. And so by now we have a lot of examples of this nice correspondence, but recently people found some peculiar low dimensional examples which are solvables. And the peculiarity of these examples is that the quantum field theory, the quantum field theory on the boundary is replaced by the concept of an ensemble average of quantum field theories. So that means that it's a QFT where some couplings are not fixed, but they're actually random. And in order to compute observables, one is supposed to first compute with some for generic coupling and then average over the values of the coupling with some probability distribution. And let me just, probably all of you are familiar, but let me just remind you some examples of this. So one example is the two-dimensional Dilaton gravity theory that goes under the name of JT Teitelbaum, JT gravity. And this theory, holographically captures the low energy limit of the so-called SYK model, which indeed is a theory in which we have Majorana fermions with a Hamiltonian that involves a random quartic coupling. So indeed we need to average over this. And in this particular case, these authors were also able to compute the path integral for this quantum gravity, for this gravity theory, with some fixed boundary, but summed over all possible bug geometries with these fixed boundary conditions. And they found that the answer can be recast as the answer in a certain quantum mechanics where the Hamiltonian H is not some fixed Hamiltonian, but rather it's taken from some random matrix ensemble. Okay, so this is another instance of this ensemble average. And another example comes from three dimensions, and this is defined by considering Chern-Simons topological theory in three dimensions, but we need to supplement it with some prescription to sum over the bug geometries. It was considered by these authors. And what these authors found is that if we take the answer for, say, you want the 2D Chern-Simons theory, and we perform the sum over bug topologies, the answer can be matched with a computation in the CFT of D compact bosons in two dimensions, in which, however, we need to average the answer over the moduli space. So this theory comes with a conformal manifold of accepted marginal couplings, and to match the answer one finds in the Chern-Simons theory, one needs to compute this average with the so-called Zamolodic of with the measure induced by the Zamolodic of metric. Okay, so these are two examples of this phenomenon. And so the existence of this of these examples raises some obvious questions. So the first one is, in which cases is holography giving a duality between quantum gravity and a single quantum field theory, and which case instead is supposed to give an ensemble average of QFT? So can we identify some rules for this, some logic for when this happens? And just to be sure, this is a meaningful question, because most definitely an ensemble average of quantum field theory is not the same as a quantum field theory. And one way to really distinguish the two is to consider, for instance, the partition function on disconnected geometries. And then for a local quantum field theory, what we would expect is that this partition function on disconnected geometry should give the product of the partition functions. While in the case of these ensemble averages, we will not get a factorization between the expectation value squared and the square of the expectation value. In fact, this difference computes the variance of our measure. It's not going to be zero. And in the cases where we have this duality with a gravitational theory, this lack of factorization is usually identified with the existence of some Euclidean wormholes geometry that contribute to the gravitational side, and therefore this explains why the partition function of the theory on a disconnected geometry does not factorize. And so to refine the previous question, like what we just briefly reviewed, is that these ensemble averages of QFT, in general, they don't respect some properties that we would like to require for local quantum field theories. So we could, I mean, it's natural to ask whether there is some dual property that is lacking on the gravity side, something that we're missing, and that is responsible for this, for the fact that we get an ensemble average rather than a single quantum field theory. And related to that, something that we might ask is whether it's possible to somehow modify or perhaps complete in some way the gravitational theories that we get in these examples in such a way to actually get a duality to a single quantum field theory. Okay, so these are the motivating questions. And also the title reminds me that please stop me at any point if you have questions. Unmute yourself and ask. So motivated by this, what our work is about, it is about giving an answer to these questions in a simple toy model for holography. And in this toy model, the main players are going to be on the gravity side, three-dimensional Chern-Simons theory with a compact gauge group. So it will be a theory with gauge group of this form. I will have G level K times G level minus K. And on the boundary, the theory that we are going to get are a rational conformal field theory based on the chiral algebra, which is a copy of G level K on the left and on the right. So I will now explain what do we do with these two ingredients. But let me, before going to the details, just give a summary of the results, so that you know what to expect in the rest of the talk. So what we're going to claim is that indeed there is some feature that is unwanted on the side of the Chern-Simons theory, if we want to try to interpret that as a theory of quantum gravity. And the feature that is unwanted is the presence of a global symmetry. Okay, so there are claims that a good quantum gravitational theory should not have any global symmetry, while we will see, we'll identify some in the Chern-Simons theory. And then the next step that we're going to perform is to get rid of this symmetry. And we will get rid of it by a gauging procedure. And what we will observe is that when we do this gauging procedure, we will get an answer in spaces with boundaries, which has an interpretation as observable in a modular invariant complete two-dimensional CFT. And this will be the answer without the need to sum over topologies in the bulk. And so as a further outcome of this, this will also give us a point of view or a way that allows us to turn the perhaps familiar correspondence between Chern-Simons and Russian conformal field theory into a full holographic duality. Okay, so now I will go into more detailed explanation of what we did. So I will start with a abelian example. So the abelian case, in this case, we have in the bulk Chern-Simons theory, which is U1 level K times U1 level minus K. And K here is going to be an even positive integer. And this is just our action. So we have field A of one factor and A tilde of the second factor. And the dynamical objects in this theory are the Wilson lines. And these Wilson lines, since we have two factors in the gauge group, are labeled by two charges, lambda and lambda tilde. And this lambda and lambda tilde, for the one level k, the possible values are from 0 to k minus 1. Okay, they have zk fusion rules. And the important thing is that actually these lines are topological, so we can think of them as charges of a symmetry. And under this symmetry, the charged objects are the lines themselves. So let me just remind you how that works. We can imagine taking one line, say line one as a charge and line two as the charged object. And then what we get is a face times our charged object. And the face depends on the couple of charges of the two lines. And so you can easily see, convince yourself from this formula, that the kind of symmetry that we get is a ZK times ZK symmetry. And importantly, it is a one-form symmetry. One-form because this means that the charged objects are extended operators, they are these lines, rather than the more ordinary symmetries, zero-form symmetries, under which the charged objects are local operators. Okay, so that's why I'm putting this one over here, denotes this this fact that the charged objects are extended operators. Okay, so here I'm just reminding some well-known facts about Chern-Simons. And in view of trying to get some holographic duality, what we need to do is to study this theory on a space with a boundary. And to do that, we need to specify some boundary conditions. So the boundary conditions that we're going to consider are holomorphic for one of the two factors, let's say the one with positive k, and anti-holomorphic for the one with negative level. And what this implies is that we're going to get on the two-dimensional boundary chiral algebra, which are two copies of U1 level K, one on the left and one on the right. Basically, the mode of the mode that we don't kill of the gauge field gives rise to a current. And then we also have some chiral vertex operator, which is also holomorphic or anti-holomorphic. And so this extends the chiral algebra to U1 level K. And again, here I'm just reminding all things that are known in Chern-Simons. And another thing that we know is that if in this Chern-Simons theory, let's say we consider first the solid torus, so this I filled here this cycle of the torus, and I compute the partition function with these boundary conditions that I just mentioned. And suppose I also insert some Wilson line in the center of my solid torus, labeled by charges lambda, lambda tilde, then what this computes for me is the product of characters for the two factors. So I'm going to get the characters, like for the holomorphic side, I'm going to get the character, for the anti-holomorphic, I'm going to get the complex conjugate, which are labeled by the two charges. And more generally, if I have a more complicated Riemann surface and I can have even punctures to which I attach some bulk lines. So the general story is that if I compute this partition function for the Chern-Simons theory with this boundary condition, I'm gonna get a conformal block for this chiral algebra. Okay. So this is, again, stuff that was worked out many, many years ago. So let's try to, in view of what we just said, let's try to see if we can think of this Chern-Simons theory as the gravity side of a holographic duality. So there are some good aspects, some pros. The first obvious pro is that the theory is general covariant because it's topological. So just meaning it doesn't depend on the metric. And another pro is that the partition function of this theory on spaces with boundary, as we just reviewed, has a natural interpretation in terms of two-dimensional conformal field theory. On the other hand, there are some obvious obstacles. And the cons are that, first of all, the answer that we get is not modular invariant. For instance, if we take the empty solid torus, we're going to get just a product of two characters. But this is not a full modular invariant torus partition function. And more generally, as I reviewed, we get some conformal block. But the answer that we in a full two-dimensional conformal field theory, the answer for a CFT observable is a sum of many conformal blocks with some coefficients, and that's not what we get. And the other negative side is that, as I also briefly reviewed, we have a global symmetry, this one-form global symmetry. Now, just a small observation is that actually these two negative aspects are in a sense related to each other. The reason is that the fact that we have the global symmetry implies that indeed our answer is not going to depend just on the boundary of our manifold, but is going to be also sensitive to the topology of the bulk. And the idea is that the topology can be detected by the fact that we have non-trivial topological operators, as I just depicted here. And in turn, the fact that the answer doesn't depend just on the boundary, but it also depends on the topology of the bulk, this can be seen as what is responsible for the lack of modular invariant. So broadly speaking, this means that whatever we're going to compute is not going to be just a function of the boundary geometry. We need to specify some additional data. So here I just depicted the case of the torus. So this square is like with the identifications on the sides of two torus. And then in this case, we need to specify if we take, for instance, the solid torus, we need to specify which cycle becomes contractible in the three-dimensional geometry. And this implies that our answer is not going to be modular invariant because the two cycles are not treated equally. Okay. So this is just a simple observation. So now we want to take the starting point, and suppose we want to try to turn it into something more promising as a gravity side of holographic duality. So one possibility to obtain modular invariance is to perform some kind of sum over bulk topologies. For instance, in this previous drawing, if I would sum over both these contributions, the one in which I fill the cycle in one way, the one in which I fill one cycle and the one in which I fill the other cycle, then this answer is going to be modular invariant. And so a possibility is to somehow supplement our answer by some sum over bulk topologies. And however, this in general seems to lead to ensemble averages on the boundary. And again, this can be, as I already mentioned before, this can be understood from the fact that if I decide to sum over geometries, then if I have these disconnected boundaries, I'm going to have both the geometry which is disconnected, but also some connected Euclidean wormholes like contributions. And these are going to lead to a lack of factorization. So this approach of summing over bulk topology is the one that has been pursued exactly in the context of Chern-Simons. But in the non-rational case, in these papers that I mentioned before, the one that gave the the correspondence to the ensemble average over the Narayan moduli space. And it has also been considered in the rational case in these papers by these authors. But that's not what I want to do today. So what we're going to try to do instead is to, instead of summing over topology, we're going to get rid of this global symmetry that, in a sense, causes the lack of modular invariance. And the way we're going to get rid of the global symmetry is by gauging it. And we will see that as a result, we will also get an answer which loses the dependence on the bulk topology. So in a sense, this will automatically give us modular invariant answers without the need to sum. And this independence on the bulk topology can be viewed as a strongest form of general covariance. And it's also a bit reminiscent of something that was observed in very different examples. But there is this paper by Eberhardt that observed a similar phenomenon in the context of tensionless limit of ADS3 CFT2 correspondence. And also something similar was found in the context of a zero-dimensional version of the SYK model by this author. Okay, this was just a remark for those of you who might be familiar with this literature. Okay, so what I'm going to do next is I'm going to explain the gauging of this one-form symmetry. So again, our one-form symmetry in this abelian case is the product of two ZKs, and we want to gauge some subgroup A. So what does it mean to gauge a discrete symmetry? It means that we have to sum over the we need to sum over the bundles, and maybe a more familiar way to think about it. So since this is a one-form symmetry, this would mean to sum over the second cohomology of our manifold M, the three manifold in which we're studying the theory, with coefficients in our group. Now, it's a little convenient in our case to actually think of it in terms of the Poincaré dual, which means that we're going to sum over the first homology. And what that means is that we think about this as summing over line insertions. So we're going to sum over insertions of our charge operator on the non-trivial cycles. And there is a formula that one can write down for the partition function for the theory after we gauge the one-form symmetry in terms of the partition function before with the insertion of a certain topological line operator, which is our charge. And here I'm slightly simplifying the formula because we're actually interested in the case with boundary, but okay, I'm gonna skip this subtleties for the sake of presentation, but you can read them in the paper. And so there are some normalization factors here that look scary, but they are just due to the fact that when we sum over these bundles, we need to consider some symmetry factors that they come with, and we need to properly divide in order to normalize our answer. And so for instance, in the case of the solid torus, this ZMA is going to be some insertion of the charge A along the non-trivial cycle, the non-contractible one. And a similar story for general geometries. And what subgroups can we gauge? So there are some conditions that we need to satisfy in order for the group to be gaugeable. And these are some conditions that the anomalies, the Tuft anomalies, should cancel. And they basically boil down to the requirement that the topological spin of the lines that generate our group needs to be an integer. And this in turn also implies that these lines will be mutually transparent. Okay, so they don't, if they link with each other, we can just remove the link and nothing happens. And so these are the two conditions, or actually one, because the first one implies the second. And which subgroups of our ZK mod times ZK satisfy this condition? So one example is the diagonal ZK. So I suppose that we consider the subgroup, which is generated just by the lines with the same charge on the left and on the right. So they satisfy this condition because basically due to the different sign with which these two charge enters, it's easy to see that we get just zero spin. And this is not the only possibility. There are, in general, other choices in which the generators of our ZK non-anomalous subgroup have some non-trivial identification between the charge on the left and the charge on the right by some factor omega. Okay, so we, in order to get the charge of the right factor, we multiply the left factor by some omega. And in order to still satisfy the condition that the topological spins are integers, we need to require that this omega satisfies some condition. It needs to be a square root of 1 mod 2k. And in other words, this implies that it can be seen that this implies that this omega is just an automorphism of ZK. So it leaves all the, it maps all the fusion rules in the fusion, in the new fusion rules. Now, an important point is what is the number of lines that we get after we gauge this one-form symmetry. So there is a general story that if we gauge a group with order with a certain order, the number of lines we get afterwards is k squared. Remember, k squared is the initial number of lines because we had two sets with k lines. We had all the possible choices for left and right charges. So this is k squared lines. And after we gauge, this reduces the number of lines by the order of the group squared. Okay. So both of these examples that I mentioned here, which are the ones I'm going to focus on, are examples in which the order of the group we gauge is also k. So in this way, these two simplify, and we are only left with one line after the gauging. So we only have the trivial line. Okay, and this property, according to the logic that I briefly explained before, and one can make it more rigorous than that, but this basically is what implies that the answer after the gauging will not depend on the bulk topology. In other words, our theory is trivial in the bulk, it's a trivial topological theory. It doesn't have any non-trivial line. So what we want to consider then as our gravity side is this Chern-Simons theory. And by this symbol, I mean the Chern-Simons theory with this decay, this non-anomalous decay gauged. And let me just explain how we compute holographic observables in this theory. So what we need to do is that we consider the original Chern-Simons theory on, let's say, some manifold M with some boundary, because we want to compute some boundary observable. And then to perform the gauging, we need to sum over insertions of what I called here A, and this red line here. What is this? This is just a composite line, if you wish, which is the sum over all the elements of my ZK group. Okay, so what I presented before was a formula in which I had the sum over insertions of all the elements of the group, but I can also view it as the insertion of one line, which is the sum of all the lines. And so again, now, for instance, in the solid torus, what I will have to do is to insert this line along the non-contractible cycle. And then after I insert this, I can try to simplify my observable, and I have some rules that I can use. So the first rule just comes from the fact that the lines that are elements of my group, they are mutually transparent. So this means that I can move A across A freely. Another important property is that if this object, this line A, links with some generic line, let's say with charges lambda and lambda tilde, this can be simplified. And what happens is that I just get a projection of the generic line to a line that belongs to my ZK group, okay, with some factor. So I just get a projection. And finally, the last rule that is useful is that if I have a line which belongs to my group that I'm gauging and this composite line, I can freely fuse them in this way. Okay. These rules, of course, can be derived by the definition of A. Any questions about this or anything I said before? Okay. So Now I want to show that with this definition, we're actually getting for this theory T the same answer as the answer in a two-dimensional conformal field theory. And this two-dimensional conformal field theory is going to be a very simple one, just a rational scalar. So this is the action. So this is a free theory. I have just this action, this quadratic action, and my scalar field is going to be periodically identified. Now let's see how this observable of the compact scalar arises. So to start with, let's consider diagonal gauging. Okay, we had some choice of what subgroup to gauge exactly, but let's gauge the diagonal one. And then we want to compute the partition function of our theory, we call T, on the solid torus. Okay. Then what do we have to do? We just said that what we have to do is to consider the Chen-Simons theory, and we need to insert this composite line A along the non-contractible cycle of our solid torus. And then what is this? This is just now a sum over the insertions of the elements of our group, which are lines with equal charges in this case, because I'm considering the diagonal subgroup of ZK. And this now gives us a sum of the answers in Chen-Simons theory. And each of these Chen-Simons contributions are a product of two characters, one on the left and one on the right. So I'm summing left and right characters for all possible values of the charges, which in this case are from 0 to k minus 1. Okay. And this is now, thanks to the fact that we have a sum and not just one single contribution, this is a modular invariant torus partition function, exactly for the theory of a scalar with radius square root of k. Okay. So indeed, the partition function for our theory T is the same as the partition function for the scalar on the torus. And just to be sure, like each term in this sum is the contribution of one primary of our chiral algebra, U1 level K on the left and on the right. And this is a rational theory. And so we have a finite number of primaries. And each of these primaries, you can think of it as the product of the left and right chiral vertex operators that would be associated with the line of charge lambda on the left and on the right. Okay. So these are, once I do this, I perform this product, I get a physical operator of the CFT of the scalar. Okay, so this was just a very simple check. So we just a computation on the torus, but okay, let's say that this suggests that indeed this theory T obtained by gauging diagonal ZK one form symmetry with these particular boundary conditions is the same as the theory of a compact scalar with this particular value of the radius. There is a more general story, namely, this is not the only way that one can put together the left and right characters to obtain a modular invariant answer. So when K can be, our even K can be factorized in this way, where P and P prime are coprime. Then there are additional ways to obtain modular invariants in which now the left and the right charges are identified through the product with this with a certain omega, with this omega that satisfies the same condition that we mentioned before. So in this case, this non-diagonal gluing of the left and right characters corresponds to a different rational scalar with radius whose square is still a rational number, but is now 2p prime over p. So, and this of course is going to correspond to the gauging of our Chern-Simons theory by the different ZK subgroup, the one that had parameter, the one that had parameter omega. So we see that the choice of gauging maps to different prescriptions for gluing left and right conformal blocks in such a way to get a physical CFT answer. Of course, there is a lot, there is a large literature about how to understand the ways to glue left and right blocks to get physical CFT answers. Here we are just giving a perspective in the language of gauging. This is particularly suited for our holographic viewpoint. And so this was just, so far we just discussed the simplest example of the solid torus. Now I want to give a slightly more sophisticated example, also to explicitly show the factorization, which is the case of two boundaries, namely the case of the toroidal, we would call it toroidal wormhole, just T2 times an interval, okay? So what did I draw here? So this is one of the two tori on one side of the interval, and this is the other one. And the arrows mean identification, such a way we get two tori. And the red is our three-dimensional geometry, okay, with these two boundaries. Now, by our rule, our rules that we just reviewed, that we just explained, we are instructed to insert this composite line A on the non-contractible cycles. So different from the case of the just a solid torus, in this case, I have to insert A both, let's say, vertically and horizontally. So I have two insertions of this. And now what I want to show is that this prescription gives me the same answer as the answer I would get on the factorized geometry, okay? On the disconnected 3D geometry. So this gives me the factorized answer. So to explain how this works, what we're going to do is we're going to use some cutting identities. So we are going to cut our three-dimensional geometry along a certain T2. And if we do that in the Chern-Simons theory, what we need to do is that we need to insert a complete set of states on the torus. So remember that here we are computing some observable in the Chern-Simons theory, and it is the sum over A's that gives us the answer for the theory T. So here, when I insert a complete set of states, I need to insert a complete set of states for the Chern-Simons theory. And these are just given by the lines, right? Because these are the states on the torus. So what this gives is the picture that I have here. So I will now cut the geometry, and I will have two solid tori, product of solid tori with the insertion of the same line on the left and on the right. So this is the sum over the complete set of states. Okay, so now I want to simplify this. And the first thing I will do to simplify is that I will push this line A over here, and I will get this picture in which the line A wraps, like links the one of the two lines of my complete set of states. Okay, so let's continue. Now, as I explained in the set of rules that I showed before, when I have this line A around a generic line, this projects the line to a generator of my group. So this gives me this Kronecker delta between the charge lambda tilde and the charge omega lambda. Okay, and now this indeed is one of the generators, sorry, one of the elements of my group. And since I have a Kronecker delta, I can put the same on the right. Remember, because the two lines were required to be the same, since I was inserting a complete set of states. And now to go on, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use the second rule, the one that allowed me to fuse always A with lines in my that are elements of the group. So I'm going to push this here and fuse the two. And when I do that, on the left half of this picture, I'm just left with one insertion of A along the non-contractible cycle. And you see now I can just bring this sum on the second factor because the first factor became independent of lambda. And what I get now on the right factor is again an insertion of A. Okay, so you see what I got at the end is a product of two solid tori, each of which is just one insertion of A. So this is precisely the answer that I would get in my theory T for the product of the two solid tori. And it shows factorization. Is this clear? I just wanted to show in some details this calculation. Okay. And similarly, in this simple example, one can look at correlation functions. So before I perform this gauging in the Chen-Simons theory, I can consider lines that end on my boundary. And generically, these lines will correspond to insertions of chiral vertex operators with labels which depend on the charge of the bulk line. And this will compute for me some correlation function. But let's remember these correlation functions are usually not single valued. They don't correspond to physical CFT correlation functions. On the other hand, if I now start with this Chern-Simons answer and I perform the gauging procedure, this, again, according to the rules that we said before, requires me to insert this object A wrapping my line. And when I do that, this is going to project the line to the ones that belong to the ZK group. And this, what it does for me is that it projects the vertex operators to the actual physical operators of my two-dimensional conformal field theory. So I will only get the products of left and right chiral vertex operator, which correspond to the physical operators of the CFT. And one can actually compute and see that this result matches with the scalar answer. Okay, so it's kind of obvious. And there are other checks that we show in the paper. We can also explicitly see the factorization for the case of multi-boundary S2 and for multiple T2 boundaries. And more generally, one can easily convince oneself that for even for a higher genus I talk more generally because this is one boundary, but if we consider the higher genus handle bodies, what we will have to do in this case is to pick the non-contractible cycles of our 3D geometry and insert our composite line A along these non-contractible cycles. And you see now I will have a lot of sums for each of these non-contractible cycles. I'm going to have to sum over all the elements of my group. And this is what is going to reproduce for me the full sum over conformal blocks that is needed in order to get a physical to the CFT answer that corresponds to the observable for the scalar on the boundary geometry. Okay, so by doing that, I'm guaranteed to get a physical answer without the need of summing over bulk geometries. Okay. So let me summarize so far. Actually, I'm not doing great with time. Okay, but let me summarize what we viewed so far. So I explained a holographic duality between Chen-Samu's theory with U1 level k times U1 level k minus k with some gauging of a one-form symmetry. And this can be placed on any three-dimensional manifold with some fixed boundary. And independent of which manifold they pick, my answer is going to be the same as the answer for the scalar with the rational, with rational R squared, which R squared is fixed by K and this parameter omega on the boundary geometry M2. Okay. And the important ingredients is that the fact that the bulk is trivial, meaning that it doesn't have any non-trivial line. This is such that all the dynamics is due to the holomorphic, anthropomorphic boundary conditions that I impose. And it also implies factorization. Still, it is non-trivial to check this factorization from the point of view of this description, okay? From the point of view of this description, it is a non-trivial check that one has to do by inserting this sum over lines in the bulk. And we showed how to do it in some cases. So there are several generalizations of this simple story, that some of which we discuss in the paper. So we can consider multiple scalars. We can consider the case where the chiral algebras on the left and on the right are not identical, like in the case we consider now. And we also briefly discuss in the paper the case of the compact boson, but at non-rational values of the radius. But what I want to discuss in the remaining time is a generalization to the non-abelian case. So let's go now to the non-abelian case. So in this case, our starting point is going to be GK times G minus K and Samos theory, now based on the non-abelian gauge group G. And again, I'm going to impose holomorphic and anti-holomorphic boundary conditions, and this is going to give some chiral algebra on the boundary, two copies of G level K, one on the left and one on the right. And what we would like to do is some similar or analogous gauging procedure that would ensure that on the boundary we get a modular invariant Russian conformal field theory with this symmetry. For instance, you can think of the WGW Wezumino-Witten models. So if we try to generalize the what we did before in the abelian case, the difficulty that we encounter is that in this case, the set of lines of the theory do not simply form a group. And the structure that they form is what has come to be known as a non-invertible one-form symmetry. So let me briefly explain what is this structure. So the structure of fusion and braiding of lines in this non-abelian case, instead of being described by a group, is described by what is called a modular tensor category. And let me just very briefly say some salient ingredients without pretending to like fully describe this material. So this is a category in which the objects are the lines of our theory. And we have morphisms between the lines, which are just junctions, okay? So what makes this non-invertible is the fact that if we now have two lines A and B, they can fuse not just to a single line that would be the product of the two, that would be the story if we had a group. Now, in this case, there are various possibilities for what these two lines can fuse to, and they will be labeled by a choice of what we do in this junction. Okay, so there will be a vector space of possible junctions that represents these maps from the fusion of A and B to some other line C. Okay, so this is what gives rise to this non-invertible structure. And another ingredient that I will also need to mention in the following is that to each line we can assign a number, which is the quantum dimension, which is the number we obtain by considering this closed loop. For the abelian case, these numbers are one. And the object that characterizes this structure are these braiding and fusion matrices, which are very schematically explained with this drawing. And they just represent coefficients that relate different morphisms between the same lines and represent these operations. Okay. And so this, what coefficients we have exactly is what characterizes a certain modular tensor category. And what replaces the concept of gauging of the one-form symmetry in this context is something that is called anion condensation. It has been studied in the condensed matter literature and also TKFT literature. And let me briefly explain what it is. So now we are going to consider some particular line, which again is a composite line of our theory. So we can think of it as a sum over the simple lines with some coefficients, which are positive integers, or sorry, non-negative integers. And the important property that this object A needs to have is to be what is called an algebra object. There are some objectives here that I will not explain that one needs to add, but the most important thing is that we need to have at our disposal some trivalent junction for this composite line A, which is basically a map between the fusion of two A's and A. And this morphism M needs to satisfy some compatibility conditions with the operations R and F. And this is summarized by these two objectives, which is associative and commutative, which means that we can freely perform these two operations. And how much time do I have left?
I guess we can take 5 more minutes.
Okay, yes. Enough. I mean, okay. Sorry, I'm going a bit fast on this last part, but hopefully 5 minutes should be enough. So then what this condensation operation amounts to is that we need to pick a triangulation of our trimanifold, meaning that we need to divide it into tetrahedra. And then we need to insert a network of this object A, this line A, on the dual edges of this triangulation. And even though, of course, the dual triangulation is gonna have 4 valent junctions, while our A has 3 valent junctions, but it doesn't matter because of this compatibility with the this associativity condition that I mentioned before. So this is what ensures that our anomaly-free conditions, the equivalent of anomaly-free conditions in this context. And I also need to supplement this procedure by some prescription for what to do when I get to the boundary of my trimanifold. So there is gonna be some phases of my triangulation that lie on the boundary. And what one can do In this case, so some natural things to do is either to insert a projector from A to the trivial line, which simply means that our network is going to stop there. So we could call this a Dirichlet boundary condition. Another possibility that exists is to insert a local operator on the face of our triangulation. This corresponds to some projector from the line A to some simple line that composes A. And what is going to be important for us is that the set of lines that we get after this condensation should be one. So let me briefly explain this. So there is this concept of total dimension of the MTC, which is given by the sum over the quantum dimensions of the lines. And after we perform this condensation, there is a well-defined method to study what are the new set of lines for the theory. And there is a formula for the dimension of the category after the condensation, which is just this ratio, where the dimension of A is defined in this way. It's just the sum of the quantum dimensions of the lines that compose A. And what we need to require for the property of Buff triviality that was so important for us to get modular invariance is that after condensation, this dimension is one. And for instance, in the case of g level k times g level minus k, there is always an option that satisfies this, satisfies all the property we want. And this is given by this diagonal object, which is a sum over integral representation of like the same representation on the left factor and on the right factor. And if we do that, this gives rise to the diagonal WGW model on the boundary. And more generally, there would be other options, and this corresponds to the classification of possible modular invariants. Also in this case, one can make checks of the holographic correspondence. So again, one can consider handle bodies. And in this case, the main difference is going to be that we don't have just the lines over the inserted in the non-contractible cycles, but in general, we're going to have also junctions connecting the various lines wrapping the non-contractible cycles. And we can also consider correlation functions. And the idea here is that the reason why this works is that, very similar to what we said in the real case, the network of A, what it does for us is that it reproduces the expansion in conformal blocks. Now, this is an expansion in conformal blocks for an interacting CFT, so it's much more complicated. But since this guy inserts all the conformal blocks in the bulk of the rational CFT, then we don't need to sum over geometries. We just get on the spot the physical answer for the CFT. And another check that one can do, for instance, is the factorization on the toroidal wormhole, also in this case. And there are two ways one can do it. One way is to, again, use just the rules of the anion to simplify the network. Another possibility, in this case, there is also an explicit formula that was provided by these authors for this network in terms of the R and F matrices, for instance, for SC2 level K. So one can just take that formula, plug the numbers, and see that one gets a factorized answer. Okay, so here I just mentioned some possible future directions. But let me stop and ask if there are questions.
Thank you very much for the very interesting talk. Are there any questions for Lorenzo?
Maybe I could ask a question. So it's not really a question, but more I'm kind of confused about something. So usually an SPT is a theory that the partition function on any closed manifold is a phase, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And an SPT always has non-trivial dynamics in the on the boundary, right? If you put it on an open manifold, you have something non-trivial on the boundary.
Yes.
But it seems that here you're describing something that is kind of like the trivial SPT because it's the partition function is one in the bulk, but you still have non-trivial dynamics in the boundary, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is due to the fact that we impose this particular holomorphic, anteromorphic boundary conditions before the gauging. I think that's the way I understand it, at least. And it is true that it's trivial SPT, though, like, there is a little subtlety in the following sense. Like, when we gauge this one-form symmetry, there is a dual zero-form symmetry that emerges. This zero-form symmetry is doesn't act on anything because there is nothing in this theory. So in that sense, it's not an obstacle from the point of view of theorems for for quantum gravity. On the other hand, you can think of turning on some background field for this. So in that sense, we could view it as a SPT for that particular symmetry. And yeah.
Thanks.
More questions?
I have a very general question.
Yes.
So, well, in more general settings of quantum gravity, you don't have global symmetry in the bulk to start with. So, what do you think is the lesson of this work to more general settings and theories of actual gravity?
Well, I am not completely sure how to apply this story to more general holographic setups, but it does suggest a connection between the fact that there might be a global symmetry and the fact that there is a ensemble average in the boundary. So, I mean, it's also true that in most examples that you were mentioning, in most cases we do get a single QFT on the boundary, right? So perhaps you started with a theory that was already had all the things in order to be a good quantum gravity theory, and then you got a single QFT. That's fine. Now, at least in this example, Ochoa and Simons, it seems that one way at least to understand the fact that in some cases you get averages is that you had this global symmetry. And since you had this global symmetry, you were forced to sum over geometries in order to get a modular invariant answer. And so it might be that I think maybe the thing that I would like to say, I hope applies more generally, is that if we have really a good quantum gravity theory, then if you manage to do the full calculation, you should not be forced to sum over geometries. This sum should be somehow that something that emerges when you do some approximation. But if you have the full theory, the answer should just not depend on the even on the topology of the background. And this is linked to the fact, I mean, it seems to require that you don't have global symmetries.
So what you do is sort of a contrast to summing over geometries, and but it's more analogous to treating the theory more exactly rather than by summing over saddles.
Yes, exactly. That's the idea. Of course, we can do it in this case because the example is very simple. Mm-hmm. It's not something that is always easy to fully solve the theory on the gravity side. Otherwise, it would be in better shape.